Election College, episode 190, The Life of Winfield Scott.
Let's throw a political party. Face it, the political scene sucks, but did it always? It's time for Election College, and class is in session. Now, your hosts, Jason Goff and Ben Smith.
So, Ben, in the last episode, we gave a 30,000-foot view of the Mexican-American War. It's a war that more of us should know about because it affects so much of the history of the United States. It affects the present. And one of the big, big players of the Mexican-American War, and actually the War of 1812 all the way through the Civil War, was Winfield Scott. Winfield Scott was born on June 13th, 1786. And like a lot of his fellow Virginian politicians, he attended the College of William and Mary, and he studied law.
As all good people? Historical figures? I don't know. There was something I used to say, as all presidents should, about studying law, but it doesn't really apply to Winfield Scott. Sorry, spoiler. But we'll get into that later. So he does get into the bar, and he does try to practice law for a little while. But he really starts getting into the military as a corporal in the Virginia militia. And his experience in the United States Army really gets started off. He gets introduced to the Secretary of War, Henry Dearborn at the time, and also President Thomas Jefferson. They're the ones who interviewed him. And it's kind of funny because how would you like to be like, oh, hey, I'm going to have an interview for a new job tomorrow. And all by the way, it's with the President of the United States. No big deal or anything. Just thought I'd let you know.
Yeah, I'd be a little bit shaky over that. But not Winfield Scott. I mean, this guy, he stood up for ethics, apparently, because one person he stood up against was our old buddy, James Wilkinson. And you know, Wilkinson, he was never following what the man was telling him to do. He kind of did his own thing. And whenever Wilkinson did his own thing, people died. And Scott stood up to this, and guess what happened? He gets suspended because you don't go against Wilkinson in a Jefferson administration. But we could go off on a big rabbit trail on that.
Yeah, for sure.
What you do need to know is on this podcast of awesome nicknames is that Winfield Scott earns the nickname Old Fuss and Feathers. And the reason he's called Old Fuss and Feathers is because he believes that the military, if you're going to be a member of the military, you should be courteous, you should look sharp, and you should be disciplined.
I think I would agree with that in general. I mean, and I think those principles are still pretty in place today for the military. But he was definitely a stickler. And I guess it got him somewhere because in the War of 1812, he's a lieutenant colonel. And he gets promoted to that position for the 2nd Artillery Regiment in July of 1812. He's up fighting in the area around Lake Ontario in the Niagara Campaign. And so a lot of the militia members that were from New York are like, you know what, we're not going to go into Canada to help support this. And the British are like, all right, cool, no problem. We're going to make you surrender then. And if you won't come after us, we're going to come after you. And so the British actually hold Scott as a prisoner of war. And the British really consider anybody who's Irish-American and a prisoner of war to be British subjects, and they're traitors, And they're like, we're going to execute them. So, you know, that's what we do to traitors here in the UK, just like you guys do it in America. Sorry. And there are 13 Americans who are executed after being captured. Scott gets off a little easier. He gets off in a prisoner exchange, and he goes back to Washington and says, hey, Senate, could you please punish the British for this crap that they're doing? I'm not really in favor of it. I got out by the skin of my teeth, but I'd still prefer they just not do it.
Yeah, and the Senate's like, hey, that sounds like a good idea, Winfield. Why not? But then President Madison steps in and he's like, no, executing prisoners of war, that's not cool. So sorry, Winfield, you really wanted this, but that's not cool.
So his career is already off to a really interesting start. He gets his job by meeting with the president and the secretary of war, and then he gets captured and almost murdered in a war. And then he gets promoted again, and he gets promoted to be a colonel in March of 1813. And he leads some expeditions. He captures Fort George on the Niagara River, and he forces the British out of this area. And Scott actually gets wounded during this battle, and it's still considered a success.
Yeah, so because of all the success, he gets promoted in March of 1814 to the rank of Brigadier General, which, keep in mind, he's only 27 years old. So can you imagine having a 27-year-old? Ben, maybe it's because I'm a little bit older than you. I guess maybe I'm a lot older than you. Some would say.
A little. We'll say a little.
It gets less and less as we get older. But
yeah,
man, can you imagine having a 27-year-old in charge of so much?
Yeah, it's pretty insane. And the whole Winfield Scott gets promoted thing, that happens a lot throughout his career.
Yeah, so he commands the 1st Brigade, and they were victorious at the Battle of Chippewa. What ends up happening, like a lot of the War of 1812, is, well, the British kind of win. The Americans kind of get a morale boost because they had a good showing, and the Native Americans are somewhere in the middle. But you can go back to our episode on the War of 1812 to kind of sift through some of that. So Scott has a very major role, as of course you would expect a brigadier general to have, during the Battle of Lundy's Lane, and he gets injured pretty seriously, but he's shown to be a man of valor. So he receives the promotion to become a major general, albeit somewhat temporary. But in July of 1814, he gets that rank, and his wounds prevent him from returning to active duty for the rest of the war.
So after the War of 1812, Winfield Scott really helps modernize some of the drill regulations and some of the different standards that they used in the Army. And he continues to serve on different boards and help out with tactics, and even does some translation of some French works into English. And he continues to be in charge. He ends up being the commanding general of the U.S. Army way later on, but it's all thanks to a lot of the stuff he did here in this time period right after the War of 1812, just kind of going above and beyond what his actual rank required of him.
Yeah, he ends up going everywhere. He goes to Europe. So there's a lot that can be said about Andy, Jack, and Marty's policies regarding the removal of Cherokees from their native lands in Georgia. And Winfield Scott had a role in that. He was actually put in charge of removing the Native Americans in the Trail, what we know now as the Trail of Tears. And you have people like our buddy John Quincy Adams who opposed this removal, but Scott said that, hey Cherokees, we're going to treat you well and you're going to be okay. But that wasn't the case. The Cherokees underwent terrible, terrible abuses, including looting and pillaging of their property. And by the time the late 1830s roll around, you have tens of thousands of Native peoples being driven out of North Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama, and then taken to what we now know as Oklahoma.
Yeah, we still need to do an episode, Jason, on the Trail of Tears and things similar to that, simply because it's terrible. It's a dark spot on our nation's history. And, you know, part of the reason we wanted to start the show is to tell people about history and hopefully learn from it. And, you know, if we and the thousands of other people who are educators in any sense of the word don't continue to remind people of these things, it could easily happen again. So something like it could happen again. So yeah, it's good just to rehash these things, as terrible as they may be. 1841 rolls around. Winfield Scott is kind of next in line along with Gaines, and the commanding general of the army dies. And the Secretary of War is like, you know what? These guys won't shut up about who's more senior than the other, so I'm just going to recommend one of them to President Tyler. And he recommends Winfield Scott to President Tyler to be the commanding general of the army. And so he gets promoted to major general, and yeah, he's the commanding general of the army. Congrats. He actually really is very involved in the lives of his officers. He's very involved in the United States Military Academy and making sure that the cadets, you know, grow to be great soldiers.
Yeah. And so he continues to rock the military world until, well, the Mexican-American War happens. And what happens is President Polk wants Winfield Scott to lead an army of enlisted folks and as well as volunteers to go to the Rio Grande and really clean house. And there were some political tensions between Scott and Polk. So Polk says, never mind, Winfield Scott, please get out of my face. Zachary Taylor is my guy to lead the charge to the Rio Grande. So this is where Zachary Taylor gains some popularity, because he is cleaning house in northwest Mexico. And Polk realizes that, well, Taylor could try to run for president and unseat me. So what do I do? And Polk turns to his cabinet, says, hey guys, what do you think? And the cabinet says, well, you need to put Winfield Scott back in charge.
So yeah, there's a lot of politicking going on. But that doesn't stop Scott from being a good military man. He goes in, runs a lot of different campaigns. And at one point, the Duke of Wellington actually says that Scott is the greatest living general. And I think a lot of people kind of echoed that sentiment, that he was the greatest living general and maybe even one of the greatest generals at all of the United States Army. We've talked a lot about Winfield Scott's military endeavors, and of course those things are important, but they lead to some possible campaigns for the presidency. In 1840, Winfield Scott is one of the candidates for the Whig Party, or at least one of the candidates to be the Whig Party nominee to be president in 1840. And of course, he's up against General William Henry Harrison. Sorry, that's tough right there. Senator Henry Clay. Wow, that's tough too. And then Scott comes in about third place. And he's really hoping that the delegates are going to kind of come to him if there's a tie basically, between Harrison and Clay. He's like, I don't really expect to win on my own right, but maybe they'll like me enough that if there's a fluke, I'll get in. And he doesn't, of course, but it's a good thought nonetheless.
Man, having Winfield Scott as a member of the Whig Party ballot was very discouraging to Henry Clay, because poor Henry Clay, I mean, he's the guy who probably wanted to be the president the most in this era, if you're talking about Whigs. And I mean, Winfield Scott pretty much destroys his chance of ever becoming president.
Yeah,
just had to interject that. I mean, as a Kentuckian, you kind of root for Clay, but yeah, poor guy. So in 1848, Winfield Scott comes back. He's like, hey, I want to be the presidential nominee for the Whig Party. And you've got Henry Clay, Daniel Webster, and our buddy Zachary Taylor, who all run for the nomination. And it seemed like he had a pretty good chance, because Clay and Taylor were both slaveholders. So that doesn't look good, to be a Whig and be a slaveholder. But what ends up happening is Taylor emerges after four ballots as the winner of the nomination.
Yeah, and ends up going on to win the general election, which we just talked about. And moving on, we'll talk a little bit about in the future. 1852 rolls around. Anti-slavery Whigs are like, okay, we don't want Millard Fillmore to be the president again. We don't want him to basically get a free ride after he took over for Taylor. And Scott has this reputation of being anti-slavery. Everybody knows he's anti-slavery, but all the support he would have had in the South is gone because he's anti-slavery. And the party has a pro-slavery platform, and that really takes away a lot of the vote in the North. So Scott is like, well, wait, I'm a Mexican-American War veteran. And they're like, well, yeah, but so is the guy you're running against. So this doesn't really help you out. Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry about your luck, dude. Hey, Ben,
So needless to say, he doesn't get to be the nominee ever.
Yeah. Well, hey, did you know this, Ben? In that campaign, Pierce actually had served under Scott, but Pierce emerges as the nominee. Kind of crazy. Like, he was the subordinate.
And yeah.
The subordinate won.
I realized I just said he never got to be the nominee, but he did. He never got to be the president, is what I meant to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good correction there.
No problem. I'm sure we would have heard about it.
So, Winfield Scott, he never gets to be president, but he remains a popular hero in the mid-1850s. And in 1855, Congress gives him the rank of a lieutenant general. And, well, how many people have had that rank up until that time? One other, our buddy George Washington. So, quite an honor.
So the American Civil War comes up, and of course you would think that Winfield Scott would be around, but he's 74 years old at this point, and there's lots of health problems that he's got going on. He's also like really overweight. He can't get on a horse to, you know, monitor things. But he's like, you know what? I can't really go into battle, but I think that this guy named Robert E. Lee could do a good job. So let's offer the command to him. And he says, he's the very finest soldier I've ever seen. So Robert E. Lee, we, you know now that is an amazing military man in his own right. Winfield Scott saw that and passed the torch, basically.
Yeah. It's so strange to think Robert E. Lee could have commanded the Union forces and then was more loyal to his state. Still just blows my mind. And that's one of the few things that I do remember from high school history, but it's so shocking. Can you imagine you're meeting with who is going to be your arch enemy a few days later? You know what else is kind of a wow?
What's that?
So he weighs over 300 pounds in his late life. And they give him a new nickname, Old, Fat, and Feeble.
That's how, just one I never want to get. I never want to be called that.
How awful and how disrespectful. Can you imagine?
Do you think it was like his buddies, his drinking buddies and poker buddies are like, hey, old, fat, and feeble? Or do you think it was like a derogatory name given to him by his opponents?
I think it was a derogatory way of referring to him. What a shame.
Yeah.
But somebody please correct me. Please tell me that it was just a joke.
They were just joshing him.
Yeah.
So he retires from the army, and he ends up actually living the rest of his life at the United States Military Academy at West Point. And he gets to see the Union have their victory in the Civil War in April of 1865. And he ends up passing away at the West Point Hotel on May 29th, 1866, and he's actually buried at West Point Cemetery.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. He served every president from Thomas Jefferson to Abraham Lincoln. That's 14 presidential administrations. And get this. Okay, so he was succeeded by General McClellan.
Uh-huh.
He had been a general longer than McClellan had been alive.
Wow.
When he retired in 1861. So General McClellan was born, and Winfield Scott, he's like, I'm already a general.
A young general, but still, he's a general at the time.
Absolutely crazy.
Yeah. You know what else is absolutely crazy? The fact that so many of you listen to this show, and we love it when you leave us a review at electioncollege.com/review. It really helps us out if you just take those few seconds and do that. Give us, you know, hopefully 5 stars or whatever you think we deserve, and a short little blurb about why you like us. And that helps new people find the show. We appreciate it.
Yeah. And for those of you who are interested in supporting the podcast monetarily, you can for as little as 11 cents an episode. You can do that by heading over to our Patreon page. It's electioncollege.com/Patreon, Patreon. And any support you give us is greatly appreciated. You know, we have to pay things like hosting and all that good stuff. And it really helps us out and just gives us encouragement as we record these podcasts.
Thanks, everybody. We will talk to you on the next episode of Election College.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.